All right, so today we're going to take a deep dive into a case that'll really make you think about what it means for a contract to be fair.
Definitely. You know, we often think of contracts as pretty cut and dry. Like if it's signed, it's a done deal, right?
Right.
But this case, from South Carolina, Campbell v. Carr, it throws a real wrench into that idea.
It really does. It happened back in 2004, and it's all about this legal remedy called specific performance. So basically, it's when a court can actually force someone to do what they promised in a contract, even if they've changed their mind.
Yeah, and in this case, it was about the sale of some land. But the thing is, there were all these factors that made it seem like one side might have been taken advantage of, you know?
Absolutely. And that's what makes this so interesting for anyone involved in contracts, right? It
Yeah.
shows the court's not just going to blindly enforce something just because there's signatures on a piece of paper.
Right. It's not just about the black letter of the law, it's about fairness, too.
Exactly. So to get into it, we've got the court documents themselves, of course, but we also looked at some really insightful legal analyses to help us unpack everything.
Yeah, so we can really see the bigger picture of what this case means for, well, for anyone who deals with contracts, really.
Okay, so ready to jump into the story itself.
Let's do it.
Okay, so we start back in 1996 when a woman named Martha Carr inherits 108 acres of land in South Carolina. Now, she was living in New York at the time and hadn't actually seen the land since she was a kid.
So right off the bat, you can see she's not exactly in a position to know all the ins and outs of this property, like
Exactly.
what it's really worth, all that.
Yeah. So fast forward a couple of years to 1998, and she decides to reach out to the people who've been leasing the land from her family, the Campbells, to see about selling it.
And these folks have been leasing it for like 30
I
years.
know, right? 30 years. So they definitely knew this property inside and out.
For sure. So Carr, she asks one of the Campbells, Betty Campbell, about the land's value. Specifically, she wanted to know what it was assessed at for tax purposes.
Okay, so she's trying to get a sense of what it's worth. Makes sense.
Right, she's getting information. And Betty Campbell tells her that the agricultural tax assessment is $54,000, which works out to about $500 an acre.
So based on that, they work out a contract, and Carr agrees to sell the land to Raymond Campbell for that $54,000. They even put down a $1,000 deposit, earnest money.
See, and this is where things start to get kind of murky. Because the true market value of the land was actually way higher, like significantly higher. It was appraised at $162,000.
Whoa, okay, that's a huge difference.
Yeah, massive. And even the tax assessor themselves had a separate non-agricultural valuation, which came in at over $103,000.
Okay, so even that was almost double what they agreed on.
Right, exactly. So you got to wonder, did Carr really know what she was getting into?
Yeah, it definitely raises some questions about whether that initial agreement was actually fair.
Totally. So anyway, somewhere along the line, Carr seems to have realized that something wasn't right with this deal.
Right.
So she decides she's not going to go through with the closing. She backs out of the sale and even returns that $1,000 deposit.
But the Campbells, they were not happy about this.
Nope, they wanted that land.
They did. And so this is where things get even more complicated, because in 1999, just a year later, Carr transfers a half interest in the property to her cousin, Ruth Glover.
This is interesting because it seems like maybe Carr was feeling vulnerable, you know? Maybe she felt like she needed some extra support or protection, especially with this legal battle brewing with the Campbells.
Yeah, it definitely adds another layer to the whole situation. So the Campbells, they decide to take Carr to court and sue her for specific performance. Basically, they're asking the court to force her to go through with that original sale at that $54,000 price, even though she doesn't want to sell anymore.
And that's a pretty big ask, you know? Specific performance isn't something courts just hand out lightly. They're usually reluctant to force people into doing something they don't want to do.
Right. So there are some pretty specific requirements that have to be met for a court to even consider it.
Yeah, like, first off, there has to be no adequate legal remedy. So, like, money damages wouldn't be enough to make things right. For example, if it was a unique piece of land or something, like, you couldn't just buy a replacement.
Right, there's something special about it.
Exactly. And then the contract itself has to be equitable. Like, it has to be fair, both in its terms and in the circumstances surrounding how it was made.
So if there's any evidence of like coercion or undue influence, that could be a problem.
Exactly. And then there's this concept of inadequate consideration, which basically means that the price was way off base.
Like in this case, right?
Right. But here's the thing, just a low price, that's not usually enough on its own to prevent specific performance.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like someone getting a bad deal doesn't automatically mean the contract is invalid.
So what does it take?
Well, the price has to be so out of whack that it either points to some kind of fraud or it's coupled with what they call inequitable incidents. That's the legal term.
Inequitable incidents. Okay, what does that mean exactly?
It's basically anything that makes the whole situation feel fundamentally unfair.
Okay, so like one party taking advantage of the other or like having way more knowledge about the deal.
Exactly. So in this case, they're looking at things like Carr's mental state and that big difference in their knowledge about the property's real value.
Right, right. So let's talk about what the court actually decided because they didn't side with the Campbells, right?
Nope. They actually overturned the lower court's decision that had initially granted specific performance.
Wow.
Yeah. The Court of Appeals, they took a hard look at the whole situation and decided that, you know what, this just isn't right.
Interesting. So what was their reasoning? What made them decide that way?
Well, a lot of it had to do with that concept of inadequate consideration we talked about, like that massive difference between the $54,000 sale price and the $162,000 appraisal. That was a big red flag for them. They even called it, let me get the exact wording here. They said it was hard, unreasonable, unconscionable.
Wow, they didn't mince words.
Not at all. And remember, they're not just looking at the numbers themselves, they're considering the context, like all the circumstances surrounding this deal.
And one of those big circumstances was Carr's mental health, right?
Right. I mean, she had been diagnosed with schizophrenia and depression way back in 86. The court records even mentioned that she had been hospitalized multiple times, like 5 or 6 times, and she was even on medication, Haldol and Cogentin, when she signed that contract.
Okay, so that's a pretty serious mental health history.
Yeah, it's significant. And the court took that into consideration, you know? They weren't necessarily saying that she didn't have the legal capacity to enter into a contract, like that's a whole separate legal thing. But they definitely acknowledged that her mental state played a part in whether it was fair to enforce this specific agreement.
Right, so even if someone's legally capable of signing a contract, their mental health could still be a factor in whether a court finds it equitable to actually enforce it.
Exactly. It's all part of that bigger picture of fairness that we're talking about.
And then there's the whole issue of the knowledge imbalance, right? Like we said, the Campbells had been leasing this land for 30 years.
Yeah.
So they knew its value, its potential, all of that, way better than Carr ever could have.
Right. I mean, she hadn't even seen the property since she was a kid, and she was basically relying on information provided by the very people who stood to gain from a low sale price.
So it's almost like they had an unfair advantage.
Yeah, definitely. And the court was very aware of that dynamic. They even had this really powerful quote in their decision. They said, "The inadequacy must not be measured by grains, but palpably disproportioned, combined with weakness of mind."
So they're basically saying it wasn't just a slightly bad deal. It was a glaringly obvious disparity in value. And that's made worse by the fact that Carr might have been in a vulnerable mental state.
Exactly. And that quote really highlights how much the court prioritized achieving a just outcome over just blindly enforcing the literal terms of a contract.
Right. So they're looking at the spirit of the law, not just the letter of the law.
Exactly.
Now, there's also an interesting little twist in this case with one of the judges, Justice Goolsbee. He wrote a separate opinion called a concurring opinion, where he agreed with the outcome, but he had a slightly different take on the legal reasoning.
Yeah, he actually focused more on a procedural issue. He pointed out that the Campbells hadn't filed a certain document called a respondent's brief during the appeal process, and he kind of questioned whether there was enough evidence to definitively say that Carr's mental illness actually impaired her legal capacity to contract.
So he was coming at it from a slightly different angle.
Yeah, more of a procedural angle. But even with those concerns, he still ultimately agreed that specific performance shouldn't be granted in this case.
That's interesting. So even though they had different approaches, they arrived at the same conclusion.
Right. And I think that just reinforces the idea that the legal system, especially when it comes to equity, it's not always black and white.
Yeah, there can be multiple ways to reach a just outcome.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's wrap this up by talking about what all of this means for, well, anyone out there listening who might find themselves dealing with contracts.
Yeah. Good idea. I think the biggest takeaway is that just because a contract exists doesn't automatically mean a court will force it to be fulfilled. Like, fairness matters.
Right. And especially if there's a big imbalance in knowledge between the parties or if one party seems to have been taken advantage of.
Absolutely.
And this case, it definitely highlights that mental health can be a relevant factor in these kinds of disputes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not just about whether someone's legally competent. It's about whether the whole situation was fair and whether one party might have been more vulnerable than the other.
Exactly. And that vulnerability doesn't have to be, like, legally recognized. It can just be a factor in the court's overall assessment of fairness.
And I think that's a really important point for people to understand.
For sure. It's not just about checking boxes, you know.
Right. And we should also mention, again, that whole thing with Carr transferring some of the property to her cousin after the dispute started.
Yeah.
Like, even though the court didn't focus on it that much, it kind of suggests that she might have realized she was in a bad spot and was trying to protect herself.
Yeah, like maybe she was feeling overwhelmed or unsure of how to handle the situation, so she brought in someone she trusted for help.
And I think that's understandable, given the circumstances.
Absolutely.
So all in all, this case, it really shows how powerful appellate courts can be. They can look at the facts of a case with fresh eyes and make sure that the outcome is truly just, even if a lower court saw things differently.
Absolutely. And that's a really important function, especially when it comes to these kind of nuanced situations where equity is a big factor.
Okay, so the big takeaway from Campbell v. Carr is that just having a signed contract isn't always enough. Courts are going to look at the whole picture.
Yeah.
They're going to consider fairness, any power imbalances, and whether one party might have been in a vulnerable position.
Right. It's not just about what's written on the paper. It's about the context, the circumstances, the human element of it all.
Exactly. And on that note, here's something for everyone to think about. Like, in our own lives, how often do we enter into agreements without fully understanding all the implications or without considering the other person's perspective and circumstances?
That's a good point. It's easy to get caught up in the legalities, but we should always strive for fairness and transparency in all our dealings.
I think that's a great place to leave it. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Campbell v. Carr.
It's been a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.